You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hi, thank you for joining us. This is Lee Baucom, and you're on the podcast for Save the Marriage. Our podcast is simply an audio recording, and it is available both on my blog or if you want to subscribe from iTunes or Stitcher. Stitcher is an app that you can use and will give you lots of other choices. And iTunes, many people know, is associated with Apple, and you can have this automatically downloaded to your iPhone, your iPad, your iPod, your iTouch, or any other iDevice. And, of course, Stitcher is available cross-platform. So if you're on Android, you can find us on the Stitcher platform. Now, we're here to help you work to save your marriage, and you can contact us in several different ways. And what I'm looking for is some feedback from you on other things that you would like to have covered in the future episodes of the Save the Marriage podcast. And so if you have something of interest, that doesn't mean that you send us all your information and all your questions about your specific situation. But if you have something, for instance, if you've been through infidelity, you don't have to tell me all about what happened in your case, but you might want to know something about the particulars of how do you recover from infidelity, how do you regain trust, how do you trust the other person, how do you forgive. Those are some topics that might be of interest. And so all you have to do is email me. You can email me at podcast@savethemarriage.com. That's podcast@savethemarriage.com. You can also just leave a comment on the blog. Go to the blog if you're listening to that, and you can find my blog that has lots of different articles from over the years and all the podcasts. You can go to savethemarriageblog.com. That's savethemarriageblog.com. That'll take you right there, and you can listen and leave a comment underneath the podcast about what you would like in the future episodes. I always see the comments, and so that'll come straight to me. Or even a little more cool, you can call and leave a message. We have a special number where you can leave a recording of any of the questions you might have. You just call HELP, H-E-L-P, 44132. That's 4-H-E-L-P, 44132. The last digits there are 44132, so 4-HELP, 44132. Or if you don't want to have to figure out how that looks on your keyboard, it's 443-574-4132. That's 443-574-4132, and just leave me a message. Now, we're here because we want to talk about what's going to help you to move forward as you're working to save your marriage. I want to talk today about what I consider to be the most important tool you have and how important that tool is. And I'll tell you a little bit. When I think about this, I think about the people who take care of their tools. You know, if you are into gardening, the people who take care of their tools and they clean them off and they make sure they're all ready, they sharpen the blades, as opposed to those who may not take such good care and they leave them out to rust. And then when they go to use them, they break, they fall apart. The tools comes in lots of different variations, right? I've been involved when I was in high school, or actually in college. I did some work in construction. And so, you know, at the end of the day, we had to clean off those tools. So the next day they were ready to go. And we had to take care of them. We had to put some care into them because we, A, wanted them to last, wanted them to be able to survive so we didn't have to keep buying new ones, and B, be effective. You know, if you've messed up the end of something, to not have it fixed means that the next time you pull it out, it's not ready. And that's the same thing with using the tool that you have, the most important tool that you have. If you don't take care of it, if you don't make sure that you're keeping it clean, you know, you don't make sure that you're keeping it sharp, you make sure that you're not using it for the wrong purposes, it's the same thing. And so you want to make sure that when I tell you about this tool, that you're committed, that you're really going to take care of it. Because what happens when we're in the middle of a crisis is we tend to slack off taking care of the things we know we need to take care of. You know what I mean by that? Have you ever been in that space where you're so busy dealing with a crisis that you don't care for what you know you need to? So bills might go unpaid, and things don't get filed, and the house doesn't get taken care of. That's the same kind of thing with dealing with this tool. This tool gets the last bit of help because you're so busy trying to put out fires and trying to do other things. And I would say you need to switch it and make it a priority to take care of this tool. Stephen Covey talks about, in his 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, the importance of making sure that you're attending to the urgent and important, number one. And then the second thing you attend to is the not urgent, but important. And the tools, taking care of these tools, are going to fall into that not urgent, but important. The interesting thing is, it really is in the urgent and important. So I want you to think about, how do you prioritize so that you can make sure that this tool is taken care of? Now, I keep talking about this tool because it is so crucial. This tool is exactly how you got into this relationship and exactly how you will save the relationship if you know it and you respect it and you choose to take care of it and you choose to show up with it. So, here I am, 5 minutes into this, and you still don't know what the tool is. Well, let me tell you. The tool is yourself. You are the most important tool you have in dealing with your marriage crisis. Now, here's the thing. You're going to discount that because you're going to say, well, you know, I'm a part of why we're in trouble. Yeah, but you're a part of how you got into the relationship. You're the person that your spouse fell in love with. You're the person that your spouse committed to. You're the person who made the commitment. You're the person who has all of the power to make choices about you. You're fully in control of you, and that's all you have control over, but that's a lot. You have no control over anything else. You have no control over, can you get family to talk with your spouse? Can you get your kids involved in ways that are going to help? Can you, you know, coerce? Can you do something that's going to switch it? Can you find a new way of communicating? Well, all of those things are only going to get you into more trouble if you do not attend to the most important tool you have, yourself. Here's where it gets tough. You probably are not taking care of yourself in the way you need to. So I'm going to be talking about some ways to self-care, to take care of the tool, to make sure it's clean, to make sure it's functioning, to make sure that you treat it in a way that's going to be helpful so that that tool is ready to go. Because if you're burning the candle at both ends, and if you're constantly finding yourself in stress and anxiety, and constantly battling depression, you're not going to show up in the relationship. And one of my key points in thriving in life and in thriving in a relationship is you've got to show up. You've got to be able to be present. You've got to be able to bring your best self to that. So I'm going to be talking about some things that you're going to say, I know those things. And I just want you to ask yourself this question. Am I doing those things? Not do you know how to take care of yourself, but are you doing them? So let's break this down into several different areas. You have several different layers to your life, and they all need attention. I want to talk about the most obvious one first, and that's your physical care. How are you doing with your physical self-care? And I already know the answer for the majority of people who are in the middle of a crisis. In fact, I would say I already know the answer for the majority of people in the world. Not good. We all know about the eating habits, about the exercise habits, about the sleep habits of the typical citizen of the world. But this is the time to step back and say, I have got to take care of myself. Now, I'll tell you, I am biased. When I had my health crisis 10 years ago, I thought my health was gone. And it came out of a very stressing period for me. Now, looking back, I realized that I was the one delivering the stress. There were events going on, but the way I was responding to them was with stress. Had nothing to do with what was going on in my life. Other people were dealing with what I was doing, but they weren't reacting in the way I did. So when I got sick, and when the doctor called us and said, he told my wife, I remember it distinctly, I'm lying on the couch feeling miserable. And he tells my wife that he thinks there's probably an 86 to 89% chance that I will be disabled and be killed by this. Well, that woke me up. It woke me up to watch my wife be in such pain while I'm in physical pain, but to see her looking forward to years of declining health for me, perhaps years, perhaps less, and finally my eventual death from this. And that woke me up. What I want you to think about is this a crisis that needs to wake you up to how you're dealing with your body? Because you only have one, and however you deal with it now is how it's going to carry you through. It is your tool. It is what carries you out there into the world. So I want you to think about this really only in three distinct areas. The first one is sleep. I want you to ask yourself this question: am I getting the right amount of sleep? And the right amount, according to research, is 6.5 to 8.5 hours. And really, the magic number is between 7 and 8. There are some people who need a little less, some people need a little more. But if you're sleeping less than 7, I want you to ask yourself, am I waking up refreshed? In fact, I would just ask you to check in with that anyway. Even if you're sleeping 7 hours, are you waking up refreshed? Or are you waking up feeling beat up every day and tired? At the other end, we know that when you sleep too much, your body, the physical body, not your mind, not your emotions, but your physical body takes on depression. It becomes depressed. The system starts slowing down. It gets too much rest. It's kind of like it thinks you're trying to hibernate. Now, a lot of people use sleep as a way of escaping, and I would just challenge you to find some other more productive ways if that's what you're doing, because all you're doing is adding to it. So you try to sleep to escape. That depresses your system, which makes you feel worse, which makes you want to sleep to escape more, and it builds on itself. If you're sleeping too little, I want you to think about how can you restructure your day so that you can get the adequate amount of sleep. Now, if you're debating me in your head, if you're saying my kids need me in the evening, there's no way I can do it, I got to get everything done, I will tell you this. Over time, all you are giving your kids, your spouse, and the world are the scraps if you are not rested. You have to take care of yourself in order to give something out to the world. That's not just a suggestion. That's a requirement of life. A lot of people have heard this analogy. It's not mine, but I think it makes its point. When you're on a plane, the flight attendant is giving the directions, and they talk about what happens if there is a sudden depressurization in the cabin, if there's a crisis in the cabin, and suddenly those oxygen masks drop down. What do they say first? If you've got someone with you, whose mask do you put on first? You always put on your mask before you put on the mask of the person beside you, because if you do not do that, you will not be around to help. So you have to make sure that you take care of yourself first. When I teach scuba diving, the first rule of helping out in a crisis is to make sure that you don't add to that crisis. When somebody else has had an accident, you want to make sure you're not the second accident. You want to make sure that you're safe. And sometimes that means that you don't do everything possible. You do everything that's safe for you to do. And it's the same with this. You have to take care of yourself. Sometimes you have to say, I just can't do that. I've got to take care of myself and get some rest. So I want you to ask the question, am I getting the right amount of sleep for me? If you're sleeping less than 7 hours, I want you to ask the question. If you're sleeping more than 8 hours, I want you to ask the question, am I getting too little? Am I getting too much? Why is that? And what can I do about it? Okay, diet. Diet is a crucial one. And I've got to tell you, this is where I really am biased. Standing at a point now of having watched myself get out of shape, be overweight, and really feeling way beyond my years to suddenly being in the best shape of my life, all because I switched my diet. Now, I do exercise, but my diet is what led it. What I've realized is that we are putting highly addictive substances in our body, and we do it especially when we're stressed. So I'm talking about sugar, caffeine, starches. Those three areas are the ones that we put in our body consistently that are only going to up the stress level of our body. When you take caffeine in, when you take sugar in, when you eat something starchy, and I'm talking about any chips, any snack like that that's crunchy, what you are doing is adding a substance that triggers the cortisol in your body. And when you trigger cortisol in your body, first thing it does is it makes you feel stressed. That's adrenaline. It's the same thing as adrenaline. The second thing is it does is it stores everything in the fat cells, thinking that you've got a crisis you might have to deal with. And so that means we're more sluggish, and it also affects our health. And so as this crisis is going on, it's a really good time to be saying, how am I feeding my tool? How am I fueling myself? Am I putting in useful fuel? And here's the thing. The human body can burn lots of stuff, good or bad. It's kind of like a car. You can put, minimal gas in it, undecent gas in it for a while. But is it going to run as effectively and as efficiently as it could if it had good gas? Same with your system. You're just putting fuel in. So if you're putting in the bad stuff that's triggering that stress, I want you to step back and say, okay, am I benefiting from what I'm eating? Or am I eating for comfort? Because that's what those different ingredients are calling towards. It feels like it's going to be comfort. Something that's going to be mac and cheese, that would feel so comforting. But at its root, mac and cheese, I'm not worried about the cheese. It's the mac. It's all about substances that as soon as you chew them up and they hit your gut are going to turn to pure sugar. And so I want you to just step back and say, how am I fueling my tool? How am I fueling my system? How am I taking care of this resource? And then I want you to think, how can you improve that? Because what we're trying to do is bring your best self into this. All right, you probably already know what my third area is. We've already talked about sleep. Now we've talked about diet and watching out for those triggers of adrenaline, right? So caffeine, sugar, starches. Now what's the third area? Exercise. I am not here to tell you that you need to get out there and spend an hour, hour and a half a day. I don't do that. I do things that are enjoyable and active. So I paddleboard and I trail run and I do some other activities that keep me active. And I do some exercise, but I do a light exercise and I do it intensely, but for a short time. And what I've learned is intense for a short time, one, saves me time, and two, is just as effective. So everybody goes, oh gosh, I can't do it. I can't work an hour and a half into my life per day. So I want to ask you this. Can you work 12 minutes into your life? If you are not aware of it, there is the 12-minute exercise program. I'm sorry, I even overstated that. 7 minutes, 12 exercises, 7 minutes. 7 minutes. I just cut it in half for you. Can you do 7 minutes of exercise? Research shows that 7 minutes of exercise can be effective if you go at it intensely. We're just 12 exercises. Look it up, the 7-minute exercise program, and you'll find apps out there that'll show you how to do it. You'll find programs on the internet. There's lots of research that's showing that just those 7 minutes can be transformational to your life. It may not be the end point of exercise, but it is a darn good starting point if you haven't been doing that yet. So now you have it. Sleep. Am I getting between 7 and 8 hours of sleep? Diet. Am I getting good stuff in my system other than sugar, caffeine, and starches? Exercise. Am I getting a minimal amount? 7 minutes. 7 minutes. If you were to make a deal with me and say, I'll do 7 minutes 4 times a week, I would be thrilled. If you did it every day, that'd be great. If you alternated 7 minutes of the 7-minute workout with 15 or 20 minutes of walking, I would be absolutely thrilled for you and say that that is transformational, especially if you change your diet and get some rest. So that's your physical side. You got to take care of the physical part of this tool. How about your emotional part of the tool? Emotional part is how do you make sure that you are not getting dragged down by the lack of connection and the lack of movement in your relationship? So I want you to think about how can you build some connections in your life? We humans are built to be in relationship, in connection. So how can you find that? With friends, with family members, in groups that are of common bonds. But here's the thing I want you to think about. This is about finding healthy relationships. This isn't about going down to the bar with your drinking buddies and getting sloshed because, oh, there are people down there. It's not about finding someone of the opposite sex that, you know, might be fun to have a chat with. This is not the time for that. This is the time to make sure your boundaries are clear, that you're taking care of yourself and that you are protecting your relationship, even if your spouse is not. But you're protecting it. You're doing that. So you find some healthy connections and you spend time with them and you don't spend time just talking about your crisis. That's not the kind of connection I'm talking about. You go enjoy your time. You go enjoy spending some time with those people and enjoying the connection you can have with them. You may find one or two people, and I always lean towards one, but two is okay, who can hear you out about your pain, but you isolate it to them. To other people, you seek out connection, not condolences. And so in those connections, you're wanting to be able to share in their world and they in your world. And then you find that one or two other people, and sometimes it's a therapist, maybe it's a coach, maybe it's a minister, maybe it's just a close friend who's willing to be a bit disengaged. You don't want someone who's just going to agree with everything you say, but someone who is a bit disengaged from your relationship and will give you a reality picture. You know, sometimes you need a friend who says, hey, this isn't about your spouse. It's about you. Why are you doing it this way? Sometimes you just need that kick in the butt from somebody. That helps your emotional life too. So connections with people who can be good, uplifting places, and then a connection with one or two other people who can listen to you, hear you out, which leads me to that other place called journaling. You may find it helpful to journal, and journals can be lots of different things. You can write it down. You can type it in your tablet or your computer. You can put it in your phone. You can record it. You can talk just to a microphone and somehow get it out, because what that does is it lets you process your feelings and emotions. And as you process your feelings and emotions, you will begin to see some patterns and you'll begin to disengage a bit. So I want you to think on the emotional level about how can you build in connections. And how can you process in ways that make sense to you? Journaling in whatever form that might take might be a good way of doing that. So now we've covered the physical and the emotional. How about the spiritual? Sometimes when we're in a crisis, we get so focused on that crisis that we lose our way in thinking about meaning and purpose in our life. Our spiritual side calls us into that. How can you engage in the world in a more meaningful, purposeful way? Are there places that you might volunteer? Are there activities that you might engage in that bring you meaning? Are there things that you do that feel like it has a purpose? I want you to do those things. I want you to seek them out. If you cannot find them, if you say, I don't have that, time to look for it, time to find it, time to dig in and say, how can I bring more meaning and more purpose into my life? Because that will feed you, and it will do something that I'm going to talk about in just a few minutes that's going to be powerful for the relationship. Then I want to give you two specific practices. The first one is about gratitude. When we're in a crisis, we tend to focus on what's not there, the lack of something, the absence of. And we miss all that we're surrounded with. So I always suggest that people spend some time doing some exercises in gratitude. Gratitude is the ability to look at things and say, wow, I do have things to be thankful for. No matter where we are in life, there are still other areas for which we can be grateful. You may have to look, because you may not be used to looking for this. But let me suggest that you spend some time every day looking for 4, 5, maybe 6, I would say 3 to 6 is a pretty good target, things to be thankful for that you're not going to repeat on a daily basis, that you're not going to say, oh, I'm thankful for my kids, and tomorrow I'm thankful for my kids, and the next day I'm thankful for my kids, because you'll stop looking for what you're grateful for. I'm thankful for that hug I get as my kids are on the way out the door from school. I'm thankful to see their smiling face when they return from school. Okay, that's about your kids, but it's specific. I'm thankful to feel the cool breeze on my face after a hot summer. I'm thankful to see the birds in the trees. I'm grateful for the world that I can continue to breathe. Now, I am functioning on gratitude for the extra time I have in life. And so I think it's very important to focus on that, and I just want to encourage you to take that on as a practice, to write it down even. If you're started a journal where you're processing your emotions, pick another little space in there and write down 3 to 6 things per day that you are grateful for. It will change how your brain functions, how your mind functions. It will rewire your brain to start looking for that. That's going to play in just a minute on why this is such a powerful tool. The other is compassion. I just finished wrapping up a magazine that I edit, Thriveology Magazine. Thriveology Magazine is a newsstand, iTunes newsstand magazine, and it offers a way of thinking about how to thrive more in the world. And this time we put together an issue on compassion. So I'm really thinking about how do I show more compassion in the world. Compassion is at its root about feeling the suffering of someone else, but it goes beyond that and really is more of an understanding that people are all at a tough spot in life, that we all have struggles, that we all have places of suffering, and I would just suggest that you practice that compassion of looking at people with a more compassionate view, more loving view. This includes yourself. Can you give yourself a break? And say, you know what, I'm not going to do it perfectly, but I'm going to do my best. I always do my best. That's compassion. It's not I'm always perfect, I'm always successful, but I do my best. Now, can you turn that compassion to your spouse and say, you know, all that hurt that's been caused to me may not have been intentional. That people do the best they can where they are, that is a place that starts the compassion in our minds when we can think, people do the best they can. I'm doing the best I can. My spouse is doing the best they can. This is not about optimal behavior, an optimal place in life. It's about doing the best you can where you are right now. So those are two practices, practicing gratitude and practicing compassion. And then there's this lifestyle of building meaning and purpose in your life that covers the spiritual. So now we've covered the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. But I want to focus on one other area, and that's self-development. When I talk about saving a marriage, I say that there are three parts to that path. First, there is connection, trying to connect with your spouse. Second, there is changing yourself. It's what we've been focused on today. The third one is creating a new path. In order to do the connecting and the creating a new path, you got to change yourself to grow to a higher level, to look for something new. So I would challenge you to be reading and listening, reading books, self-development books, or listening to seminars, or listening to podcasts, or listening to audiobooks, finding some way of feeding your mind, not just about the relationship, but about how to be a better person. Find an area that interests you. And follow that up. It's not just about the relationship. In fact, if you're in the middle of a marriage crisis and you are only reading about the marriage, you have become one-dimensional and you will not be particularly attractive to your spouse. And that's part of why we're looking at this as being the tool. As you take better care of yourself, you become more attractive to the world and to your spouse. As you're reading and listening to these nurturing thoughts, you become more interested in the world, you become a higher self, and that's always more attractive. Are you developing interests? Are you finding places maybe you haven't explored before? I'm always looking for, okay, what else can I try out? My parents will tell you that whenever I got interested in something as a child, it engulfed me, and that hasn't changed. What it is might change, but the engulfment doesn't change. And so I enjoy getting involved in something. Right now, I'm doing some slacklining because I want to build my balance. Well, what I'm finding is I am not good at a slackline. I thought I had good balance until I tried to get up on that slackline, but it's kind of a fun thing to develop. Now, that's a physical development, right? But it also challenges my mind to try new things, to get out of my comfort zone, to look like a fool in my yard, to try new things. So are you developing interest? Because if you're not bringing interest into your life, you're growing stagnant. Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, says you're either green and growing or ripe and rotting. That's it. Green and growing or ripe and rotting. When you continue to grow, when you continue to find new things in life, you grow, you develop. You're green. If you don't, you become stagnant. you become ripe, and then you rot. So are you developing interest? Are you listening to things, reading things that are going to develop your selfhood? Are you developing interests that bring interests into your life, that brings energy into your life? And that's the big piece. It brings that energy into your life that revives you and gives you a reason to go, wow, this is an interesting place to be right now. And then I want to challenge you to think about meditation. Meditation has gotten this image for people where they've got to spend 2-3 hours on the floor in an uncomfortable position, repeating some mantra in their head or humming some sound in their head or doing something. That's not meditation. It is meditation, but it's not the only way to do meditation. Meditation may be just spending 5 to 15 minutes sitting in a chair with your eyes lightly shut, counting your breaths. And you don't have to count, infinitely. You can count to 4 and repeat. Breathe in, breathe out 1. Breathe in, breathe out 2. Breathe in, breathe out 3. Breathe in, breathe out 4. Breathe in, breathe out 1. And you keep that, because what you'll find is as you're trying to do that, your mind cooks up another thought. And you're going to kind of get caught up in that thought. And then you're going to realize what you're doing, and you're going to step away from that thought and count your breaths again. Or you might decide to ponder something. Ponder compassion, to think about compassion. Focus on somebody you want to be compassionate towards. Picture them in your mind. Hold them in your mind, and when something comes along to disrupt it, you return yourself to that. Those are meditation. Simple things to do. 5 to 15 minutes will transform how your brain operates, and it will transform your life. Just 5 to 15 minutes. And then through the day, no extra time, are you practicing awareness and mindfulness? Now, I have to admit, this is a struggle for me. Since I am often working around the house in one of my offices in the house, and by the way, when I say offices in quotes, I have one office that's real, and then the others are wherever somebody is not. So the kitchen counter when nobody's home, or the basement when somebody's there. I'm moving around trying to get from an office to an office, some place that I can settle down and work. But sometimes I'll be sitting at the counter doing some work, and someone will come in and need to have a conversation with me. And what do? Sometimes I half listen while I'm still looking at whatever I'm doing. Whatever I'm doing could have waited. I could have invested, or I could have said to the person, hey, give me 5 minutes, let me finish this, and I'll give you my full attention. But what we do instead is we try to split our attention. I'm trying to relearn that lesson, but we split our attention. And instead of listening and giving our attention to the other person, we split it and we pretend like we are. It's kind of like driving and texting. Neither one are getting your attention. Both are going to suffer. One might be life-threatening and the other is just going to be a weird message that someone gets. But it's the same in life. Are you being mindful in what you're doing? Are you being mindful when you're interacting with other people? Or are you just waiting to figure out how to say what you want to say to them as they're talking? That's not being mindful. To be listening to what they're saying, that's mindfulness. Or how about this one? You gobble down your food, not even noticing what it tastes like, just to get it out of the way. Okay, that's not mindful, and it's not going to lead to good diet. But what if you were to sit and savor it? Let me tell you what happened when I started doing that. When I started really tasting what I was putting in my mouth, I stopped putting crap in my mouth. I stop putting the bad stuff in my mouth because it doesn't taste good. It makes my mouth feel weird, but only when I attend to it and think about it. If I don't, I can get it down and never notice it and continue to feed my body yucky stuff and not even notice it. So mindfulness is just noticing what you're really doing while you're doing it. When you're working, you're really working. When you're communicating with someone else, you're really communicating. When you're walking, you're really walking. When you are doing anything, that's what you're focused on. Now, how does this make it back to the tool set? As you start doing these things, not only will you be giving yourself a healthy platform from which you can work, making sure the tool's going to last, but you're going to be a heck of a tool, an attractive tool. You're going to be somebody who is no longer about the complaining and no longer about the begging and no longer about the poor, pitiful me's, but somebody who is stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility for where your life is headed and engaging in the process. And when you do that, you will become attractive. That's not why you do it. That's the fringe benefit of it. Why you do it is to make sure you take care of yourself. But what you do leads you to be more attractive to your spouse. And it pulls them back in because they're going, wow, what's going on with this person? I want to be with this person. You probably will become more like the person you were when you fell in love. You probably will re-engage in ways that you have not been engaged in the world and with your spouse for years. I challenge you to take that on as you take care of your physical, your emotional, your spiritual, and your self-development parts of life. That's how you take care of the most important tool you have as you work to save your marriage. Okay, as we wrap up, I want to remind you that if you've got a topic that you want to have covered, you can get to us. Just email me at podcast@savethemarriage.com, podcast@savethemarriage.com. Leave a comment at the blog, that's savethemarriageblog.com, that's savethemarriageblog.com. Or you can leave me a voicemail at 4-4-1-3-2. That's number 4, H-E-L-P, 4-4-1-3-2, or 443-574-4132. That's 443-574-4132. And until next time, this is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you continue to work to save your marriage. I wish you well.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.